Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tree City Sports Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Baker, here as always with my co-host, Graham Moen. Say hello to the people, Graham.
How's it going? Not a victory Monday, but...
quite honestly, the Browns lost, felt like it. And it still feels like a victory Monday because of how awesome this entire second half of the year was.
And because we lost, the Steelers didn't make the playoffs. So yeah, you know what? That was hilarious.
Seeing like 70,000 Steelers fans at Heinz Field chanting, "Let's go Browns," then walking out sad. Yeah. Now Steelers fans just got a little picture of what it's like to be a Browns fan. They're going to do it. They're going to do it. And they didn't do it.
Yeah, welcome to pretty much our entire fanhood.
Yeah, and guess what? We're going to be better than you for like the next 10 years. Okay, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. But
it's at least a discussion.
This is a Browns podcast. There is a lot to talk about. This is going to be kind of a mega podcast.
Yeah.
You may have to listen to this one in two or three segments because we're talking about a lot. Just to give a little rundown, we're going to talk about the Browns-Ravens game. We're going to talk about kind of the year in review, how our expectations were met or not met, break down individual positions. We're going to give kind of a overview of going forward of what the Browns have to do to achieve their goals, and a brief little discussion about head coaching jobs around the league. Starting with the Browns-Ravens game.
That was such a fun game to watch.
It was.
I mean, amazing.
That was the most intense Browns game since...
I don't remember.
I really don't know.
That felt like a playoff game.
I know. I mean...
and even though the Browns were out of it, it felt like a playoff
game. Was it 2014 when Brian Hoyer was 7-4?
Yeah.
And they benched him for Johnny Manziel, by the way, which is...
and then they finished 7-9.
Anyways, I love Mr. Hero. Thanks, Brian Hoyer. I love you. That year, I don't think had any games that were this intense because by the end of the season, the Browns had already blown their chance at a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And the Browns weren't going to make the playoffs in this game either. But, you know, I think the NFL did a great job moving this game back to 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers game was going on at the same time. Both games were close.
Yeah.
The Browns were doing everything they possibly could, despite the refs screwing them again.
Which, not only the fans were watching it, yeah, but you saw the Steelers players after their game, because it ended about 10 minutes before the Browns, yep, game ended, kneeling, watching the big Jumbotron, hoping that the, yep, Browns would pull out a win. And
that's how far the Steelers have fallen. They needed a Browns win.
The Browns got probably within 15 yards of winning that game.
Yeah.
They were so close.
I thought they were going to do it for a minute.
Me too. Especially with the way the last drive went.
You got to give the Ravens credit. They have one of the best, if not the best, defenses in the entire NFL for a reason. And Baker Mayfield was great, but he's still a rookie quarterback.
I think that those last 6-7 minutes of the game really showed the fight, yep, in the Browns. Like the Ravens had run over the Browns the entire game on the running game. They rushed over 300 yards, yep, but when they had to make a stop, they stopped them on that one speed option play that the Ravens ran, which I was surprised they did because they could have just done their normal running plays and probably gotten the first down. But the Browns stopped them, got good field position, and were driving down the field and had two catches that had to go to review because they were so crazy.
It was crazy. And just the suspense. And
my heart was pounding.
I think 07 is the last time the Browns really played meaningful games, but the Browns lost week 16 in 07.
They lost to the Bengals.
To the Bengals. And that pretty much blew their chance to the playoffs. And none of those games had this much suspense, I don't think.
Thanks, Jim Sorgi.
I mean, this is one of the most intense Browns games since we came back. And the Browns didn't really have anything to play for except pride. But the Browns this year, the second half of the year, played so hard and played with such tenacity that it just really felt like, to me, even though they lost, the fact that they made this game so close and this was such an intense game that, I mean... people across the NFL are watching this game because of Baker Mayfield, because of the Ravens' playoff expectations, because of the Browns', you know, second half improvement. I really feel like
the
Browns lost this game, but they won the battle that was this season. And this really does feel like, even though they lost, it feels like the beginning of a new era.
Yeah,
and
I think the big difference is number six.
I just can't wait for more games like this next year when the games – I mean, look, how many Browns games have really mattered in the past 20 years? Not many.
Maybe a handful.
And I think going forward, the Browns are a team that truly will play most of their games that will be meaningful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the reason
It's going to be great. I think this was intense.
I think the reason this game was so intense as opposed to like that 2014 year where 7-4.
Intense. Anyways, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Was the fact that the Browns – fans and a lot of people finally feel like around the league that the Browns have a quarterback, and
yeah,
it's Baker Mayfield is just
Yeah, best rookie quarterback in the history of the NFL. No big deal.
The Browns were driving that last drive, you felt like the Browns could win that game.
Yep.
In a lot of years, if the Browns were in those close games, the quarterback, you did not trust the quarterback or the offense to do anything. But you felt like the Browns could go down the field. And like I said, they were so close to getting into field goal range and giving Greg Joseph a chance to win the game for us.
Yep.
Which was amazing.
You discussed last week how good Baker Mayfield had been against the blitz. And Browns had first and 10 somewhere around what? The Ravens 45-ish?
It was the
50-ish?
Yeah, it was like the 39.
Yeah. It was just out of field goal range.
Yeah.
And the Ravens just blitzed four times in a row. And Baker Mayfield couldn't complete a pass. What did you kind of see on those last plays that was a reason why Baker Mayfield wasn't great against the blitz?
Well, I mean, they brought eight guys and then they left their three corners, which the Ravens have probably the best secondary in the NFL.
Yeah, I think they brought between six and eight players, all four players.
They have three legitimately great cornerbacks with Jimmy Smith and Marlon Humphrey and Tavon Young. They can get anywhere on the field that they want. They are really physical. They stay really close to the receivers. And one of the throws could have been a catch had Baker Mayfield thrown it better to Jarvis Landry in the third and 10. That would have made it fourth and manageable and maybe wouldn't have had to have such a hectic play. But I mean, Baker Mayfield did pretty well against the blitz for most of the game, but when you bring eight guys and you have that lockdown secondary, it just wasn't something that Baker had seen yet, and he wasn't able to get over that. I mean, it was fourth and 10. I think, like I said, it had been fourth and two or fourth and three.
That fourth and 10, different. It looked a lot like the Browns blitz against the Broncos a couple weeks ago that won them the game.
Yeah. I mean, he just didn't have – he had to pretty much snap the ball and throw it immediately. He didn't have any time to really read. He had to just be like, I have to know where my guy's going to be, and – props to the Ravens on that last stand. They broke up a couple passes. They had they got lucky that Baker didn't throw a dart to Landry because going into
that was the play he had.
Yeah, and during that drive, he had thrown, like I said, two passes that had to be reviewed by the booth because they were such great throws and they were such on the money that the receivers had just enough space to get their feet in. Or with Jarvis Landry's case, he was able to keep his one hand under the ball
and make the catch. He's made a lot of those.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually had a couple drops this game.
He did. He had one bounce off his face mask, but then he redeemed himself later in the game with a touchdown on a wide open play, which was great. But I mean, Baker, like Andrew said, probably had the best rookie season in NFL history. He broke the rookie touchdown record, 27 touchdowns, finishes the year with 14 interceptions. For a rookie, that's about what you expect.
For a rookie, 27 touchdowns and 14 interceptions is phenomenal.
Like, that's a 2-to-1, almost 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. That's pretty good. And from just most quarterbacks in general.
In the history of the National Football League, no rookie quarterback ever had more passing touchdowns. And again, he didn't start the first two games. He didn't start the third game either. He played 13 and a half games.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's incredible.
The most incredible thing to me this year, I think, was the fact that he didn't turn the ball over once in the red zone.
Oh, phenomenal. And then a lot of that credit goes to Freddie Kitchens for his play design.
Yeah.
Still, the decision-making around the red zone was, for a rookie quarterback, you just don't see that. You really don't.
You don't see 20 touchdowns and zero interceptions. Yep. That's unheard of.
Yep.
That he was elite in the red zone. And that's what gave the Browns a chance to win this game. When early in the game, it looked like the Browns were about to get blown off the field. The Ravens had a penalty called back when it was 21-7. That could have made it 28-7.
Yep.
And the Browns got lucky there, and then they responded and came back. And we're not going to talk about the penalty or the touchdown that should have been. It was a
bad call. I'm going to talk about it.
All right, you go ahead, because I'm upset about it, but at the same time, the Browns had a chance to go down the field and win the game, and they had the opportunity, and it's just not worth
doing it. This is the context I want to talk about it in, and I'm going to be brief here. I've had this rant before. The Raiders game early in the season.
Yeah,
I'm going to say the same thing I did then. I'm going to reemphasize my point here because, okay. So the play that Graham's talking about, for those who don't remember it or didn't see it, the Browns were down 13.
It was 20-7.
20-7. About 2 minutes to go before halftime, the Ravens had the ball
at the one
at the goal line.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson tried to reach his hands across with the football to get in the end zone.
Yeah.
As he reached across, the end zone judges blew the play dead and said it was touchdown. As he reached across, the Browns batted the ball out of his hands. He fumbled. Jabril Peppers picked it up and had 90 yards of wide open field. It would have been a touchdown.
He would have scored. It would have been 20-14 going into half.
And upon review, Lamar Jackson did not cross the plane.
Yeah.
he didn't get a touchdown. So the refs blew the play dead despite the fact he didn't get in the end zone. So when they blow the play dead, that means that entire, you know, 90 yards that Jabril Peppers could have returned the ball, they can't advance the ball. So the Browns got the ball back. The Browns got the turnover upon review. They got the ball at the 7-yard line. That would have made it a 20-14 game, would have been in a totally different game.
And a huge momentum swing.
Here's the problem I have with the officials in this play. If you think it's – I don't have a problem with them thinking it was a touchdown. I have a problem with them calling the play dead because here's the situation. If you don't blow the play dead, you can review it and get it right one way or another. Touchdown for the Browns, touchdown for the Ravens.
Jabril Peppers runs it back and it's in void and it's a touchdown for the Ravens, or he runs it back and it's a touchdown for the Browns.
When you blow the play dead, you're saying the Ravens will have a touchdown or the Browns will get screwed. Those are your only two choices.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the refs didn't expect the ball to get batted out a split second after he reached across. I'm sure they didn't expect the Browns to return it. I understand that. But this has been an issue in the NFL before. This has happened at least once a year where a team gets screwed because a play is blown dead. The
Browns has been like three times.
The NFL needs to teach its officials, don't blow the play dead unless you're 100% sure. Because if you let these things play out, it was under 2 minutes. It wouldn't have even required a challenge. It would be an automatic booth review. And there was an automatic booth review. And it got overturned. But because
they called it a touchdown.
But because it was whistled dead. But you see what I'm saying, though? If the Browns would have picked it up and turned it for a touchdown, it would have been reviewed anyways.
Exactly.
That could have been overturned to be a Ravens touchdown if he did get in.
Yeah.
Just stop blowing the play dead. And this is the problem I have with it, is the reason this happens is because the NFL refuses to allocate enough resources to its officials. The NBA has put in a comprehensive training program for every official.
And most of them are full-time.
And, yes, the argument here is that the NFL has 16 games and the NBA has 82. The NBA plays for 9 or 10 months. The NFL plays for 3 or 4. I understand that. But if you're going to sit here and lie to my face and tell me the NFL doesn't have the resources and the money and the time to get these refs right, you're lying to my face.
Yeah.
Just because these guys don't referee or official these games year-round doesn't mean the NFL shouldn't spend the money and the time to get this shit right. Excuse my French. Because, honestly, I'm not mad the Browns lost this game. I'm just mad that the NFL lets results be determined by bad officiating over and over again. And again, if they spent more time with the officials and more resources, these things wouldn't happen. The NBA has problems with officiating here and there, sure, because it's impossible to officiate perfectly. But guess what? Any situation like this, anything where there's a question, the NBA 95% of the time gets the call right because they've trained their refs the proper processes for these things. And the NFL refuses to do that.
And I would argue
and
the
NFL. It's maddening because, again, the NFL has an insane amount of money. There's no reason they can't get this right.
I would argue that calls are even more important than the NFL because there's 16 games.
And that's the point.
Not 82.
Exactly.
Any play can swing. That call could have potentially help the Browns eliminate the Ravens from the playoffs.
And that's the thing is, like I said, the 82-game season versus 16-game season, I understand the time commitment. But like you said, in a 16-game season, one play can mean
literally
the outcome of making the playoffs or not making the playoffs for a team like the Ravens. And it just makes no sense to me that the NFL refuses to fix this problem. And I hope that going forward, debacles like this kind of force their hand. But it hasn't yet. That's because the NFL has the worst commissioner in the history of modern sports. Maybe Gary Bettman. But Roger Goodell's a disgrace. He sucks. Screw him. $44 million a year to sit in his laurels and not fix problems. Must be nice.
Yeah.
Anyways, now that my rant is over. Again, this rant isn't about the Browns losing the game. It's about the fact the NFL refuses to address a problem. And if the Browns are in a position where they are competing for a playoff spot and this shit happens again, it's going to be riots. And I just don't want to see this happen to teams, regardless of it being the Browns or not. There's just no reason for these things to keep happening when they're a clear, fixable issue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
I mean, it happened last year with the Steelers where Jesse James had a catch that wasn't really a catch, and they called it a touchdown, and then they couldn't overturn it.
Yep.
So, like, the refs, they have – and the guy that was officiating, this is his first year as a referee, and you put him on a game that decided a playoff game – that decided a playoff berth?
Just tell the refs – don't blow it dead unless you're 100% sure. Because if you blow it dead, it ruins the play.
I say just don't blow the play dead at all.
If you just let it go, then you can review it and
fix it. Not even unless you're 100% sure.
When you're blowing it dead like this, you're ruining any chance you have of actually fixing your call if you make a mistake. And again, refs are going to make mistakes because it's impossible as a human being to be 100% right every time. You just have to allow yourself the opportunity to fix the calls.
I think the most frustrating part on that call was that there was a line judge there.
Yeah. Well, they both blew it dead. Yeah.
Maybe, and now I've heard people say, well, maybe they shouldn't even have a line judge. Maybe they should just have something on the sidelines that helps.
I don't know.
That helps that. I don't know. That's a different discussion.
It's just disappointing that the NFL refuses to address this issue because it's a big issue and it's really affecting outcomes of games. And like I said, I'm not angry at the Browns lost. Like I said, this feels like a victory Monday, even though they lost.
Yeah.
But we can get back to the Browns. I just had to, it's just, as someone who thinks logically, it really bothers me the NFL just refuses to address this.
It's the one thing that the Browns we definitely saw are going to need to fix is their defensive line was getting gashed.
Yeah, the Browns run defense was, and look, the Ravens are setting NFL records for stretches of games outrushing their opponents.
I think they've had like almost 1,800 rushing
yards. The Ravens are a great rushing team, yeah, but the Browns defense really, really got gashed.
Yeah, I mean, they did better later in the game at stopping some things, but early in the game, Lamar Jackson was just breaking tackles, going for touchdowns. Gus Edwards was going right up the middle. Kenneth Dixon at one point for the Ravens had like 7 carries for 113 yards.
Ugh.
It's just like the Browns can't be giving up those huge chunk plays and then just assuming they're going to stop them in the red zone, which they didn't because then Lamar Jackson twice, and actually 4 times, he had 2 called back, twice for, officially just broke and just went right past everyone because he's more athletic than anyone on the field.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, the Browns did kind of make adjustments late. They started doing that thing where they were shifting the defensive line right before the snap to change blocking
assignments.
And they
played more defensive
linemen.
That was
brilliant. That really worked.
Yeah. And they started playing more defensive linemen, too. They played like 5 down linemen. And they're like, okay, you want to run? Okay, we're going to have 5 guys.
End of the day, though, the vast majority of NFL teams will not be like the Ravens where they're run first, run second, run third.
And running read options.
The Browns, you're right. But the Browns are going to have to address the run defense because teams that they're not going to be able to sell out to stop the run against every team that has a good running offense. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be teams that are good at running and passing. And right now, the Browns have been a bad rushing defense for most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the year, they were okay, but they need to address that for sure.
Yeah.
We can go more into that later on when we talk about, you know, kind of what we want to see from the Browns going forward. But end of the day, like, it was a fun game yesterday. And the environment in Baltimore was insane. And Baker Mayfield and the Browns were almost good enough to get that win anyways. And that would have been – if the Browns would have won that game – coming into the offseason would have felt just insane. But like I said, it feels like a victory Monday anyways.
I mean, it was a great game. I wanted – the Browns all year played like – or at least since Baker Mayfield took over and the coach should not be named and Todd Haley left, the Browns have been so exciting and so fun to watch. Every game you feel like you can watch, they're going to go in and win, with the exception of that first game against the Chiefs where – it was the first game and you knew there wasn't going to be a chance.
Too much of a talent disparity.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, you know. Like I said, just yesterday alone, I take solace in the fact that 70,000 Steelers fans had to go home sad because the Browns lost a game.
That was fantastic to watch.
Hope it feels good, losers. Anyways.
Twitter was great because they were all like, the Browns had one job, and it's like, don't depend on the Browns.
Yep. That's what happens when you're depending on the Browns to win a game. It's not going to work out. That's what we've learned over the years. like you said, the Browns were a drastically different team once we moved on from Todd Haley and he who must not be named as head coach. And by the way, we're not naming him because we're scared of him. We're not naming him because we're tired of talking about him because he's a bum.
Yeah.
Year in review, I think the Browns exceeded my expectations almost across the board.
I mean, we both picked them to win 5 games.
Especially the second half of the year.
We both picked them to win 5 games, and they won 5 games just in the second half of the year.
Yeah, the first half of the year, the Browns were what I was expecting.
And they should have beaten 4 of the teams that they played earlier in the year, and they just – bad coaching cost them.
Yeah, the Browns were a couple of bad calls, bad coaching mistakes, bad breaks away from making the playoffs.
Steelers, Saints, Raiders, and Buccaneers games. All those games were winnable for the Browns, and the coaching and the just being able to
– And a kicker.
Zane Gonzalez ruined it that one game. But just the execution because the coaching staff wasn't a good coaching staff.
By the way, the Browns lost by 2 yesterday, and Greg Joseph missed a 46-yard field goal. I'm just saying. Brown's got to find a kicker. Anyways,
no.
So Graham likes Greg Joseph. I don't. If you told me before the year that the Browns would fire their head coach,
I like it already.
And they would find their quarterback of the future, undisputably, and their running back of the future and their number one cornerback for the future. I mean, I know that
I'd say that's funny that the Browns never do.
That would be amazing. And look, Tyrod Taylor played 2.5 games.
Yeah.
And the Browns' plan A for this season did not work at all.
It was like a solid F.
It failed miserably.
Solid F.
But the backup plan?
A.
Woo! It ended up working out about as well as you could possibly expect.
Maybe the backup plan should have been the first plan.
Maybe you... I almost said his name. Maybe our coach would still have his job.
Must not be named.
Yeah. Maybe maybe our head coach would still be here if he gave Baker Mayfield a single first-team rep in the entire preseason.
Yeah.
My God, that was stupid.
Well, that's why his team lost a bunch of games.
And that's why Baker Mayfield stared him down while he ran on the sideline last week.
And
anyways.
And got fined, which was hilarious.
Coming into the year, who was your number one choice for Browns quarterback coming into the year?
Ryan Tannehill.
My number one choice was Kirk Cousins. Thank God we weren't running the Browns.
Yeah.
And thank God for John Dorsey, because the Ryan Tannehill and Kirk Cousins.
My thought process was that the Browns could draft a quarterback number one and just sign Tannehill as a bridge guy. And then they did it with Taylor, and I'm like, okay. Tannehill's probably better than Taylor, but at this point, it doesn't matter. But I was very, very wrong. Tannehill had been hurt a couple years, and when he had played recently, he had been good.
Yeah.
But he just – he's not it. He's never going to be a good quarterback. And then Kirk Cousins, like – I don't fault you, because at the same time, he was a pretty good quarterback for Washington, but –
He's a poor man's Baker Mayfield at this point.
Whatever,
I mean, seriously.
Whatever it was, whatever is his thing, like he went to Minnesota with a vastly better team and they missed the playoffs.
It did not work out.
Yeah, they went to the playoffs with Case Keenum and couldn't make the playoffs with Kirk Cousins.
Case Keenum.
Case Keenum, who, by the way, led the 6-10 Broncos.
I still have a cold, by the way, so I apologize if I sound like crap or I'm coughing.
I think both of us, when it comes to talking veteran quarterbacks, don't know shit.
Apparently, all I know is that Baker Mayfield is going to be awesome. So, Jarvis Landry came from Miami, and I think, I mean, the Browns overpaid for him a little bit.
Oh, they definitely did.
But I think that happens in free agency. Technically, he was a trade, but, you know,
Well, especially for a team that went 1-31 the last 2 years before this year.
But they had the space to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that coming into the year, the big question with Jarvis Landry was not whether he could produce in the field. It was in Miami, there were a lot of chemistry issues. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of
Even with his own head coach.
Yes. There were a lot of kind of issues with him. And by all means, not just him. It was a lot of players there.
That locker room wasn't great in terms of culture.
Right. The question with Jarvis Landry was he was a little bit overpaid for what he was as a receiver. But could he be a true leader? Because that's where he was going to earn his money. And there were a lot of doubts about that. And he exceeded all expectations in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, Jarvis Landry really helped, I think, these young receivers, which other than him, pretty much all of them are 25 or under. Yep. And he helped Antonio
Brown. It's contagious, bruh.
Yeah.
The shit's contagious.
I mean, he, along with his wide receivers coach, I always forget his name, but... They have a good working relationship because he was Landry's wide receivers coach at LSU. No, the other one.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
But he was his wide receivers coach at LSU, so they had a good relationship. So he trusted Landry to go in and be like, I need you to lead these guys. I need you to take Antonio Callaway under your wing. I need you to talk to Rashard Higgins and get him going. And Jarvis Landry really performed very well in terms of a leader and made it so that way – you know, that the Browns could actually feel like they had a guy that was going to help improve the culture in the locker room and make it feel like that it really was going to be a bright future, just because you're not going to see very often a wide receiver just come in and immediately be able to change the culture of an entire position group. It's really quite amazing to see what Jarvis Landry did. And he did play pretty well this year. He didn't have 100 catches like he did every single year in Miami, but he was good in his role. He showed more stuff down the field, but as a leader...
76 catches, 976 yards, and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid number two wide receiver stuff.
Yeah, and that's what he is. He's a number two wide receiver in production, but as a leader, he's someone that, gosh, the Browns absolutely desperately needed for this offense, especially with the skill position players where for years we've had nothing and we had to deal with Josh Gordon's troubles and all of that stuff for a long time.
I mean, I think... just look at Antonio Callaway. He came into the season as a project. He got a lot of reps off the bat that he clearly wasn't ready for. Antonio Callaway had a couple nice games early and then really struggled for a while in the midseason, but he improved drastically as the season went along. I mean, his route running, his hands, his consistency, these areas that Jarvis Landry excels in, Antonio Callaway vastly improved in as the season went along. And I have no doubt that some of that is just his hard work and coaching helping him along. But I think if you look at Jarvis Landry, like I said, Callaway improved in the exact areas that Jarvis Landry excels. And I guarantee you, having Jarvis Landry there to A, show him the example of how it's done, B, teach him, and C, I mean, Jarvis Landry was truly one of the vocal leaders in this team. Mm-hmm. You know, we said, shit's contagious, bruh. That's what he said in the preseason. He was on Hard Knocks and kind of ranting, and everyone kind of rolled their eyes. But I think clearly,
to an extent, it was true.
Yeah, I think his mentality really, really helped the young receiving core.
And he's also a young guy as well. He's only 25.
So right, he's but able he's to a veteran in the yes, NFL.
But he's yeah. able to identify with a lot of these guys because he is around their age. But yep. at the same time, he's been there and done that, and he's had difficult situations, and he's never been considered a top receiver. I mean, he was always overshadowed in college by Odell Beckham, and even into the NFL, everyone's like, well, he can catch the ball a lot, but what is he really? And he has that chip on his shoulder, and I think that really added to the chipping, because those Browns wide receivers started playing a lot better, and they also were run blocking pretty well too, and were yep. being physical, and Callaway was getting in there, and they were getting in there helping each other, encouraging each other. It was a group effort a lot of games where Baker was throwing it to different people.
I mean, Jarvis Landry would have games where he'd have two catches for 20 yards and the Browns would win, and he was not complaining at all.
No, because all he cares about is winning.
He had a team-first mentality here, and I think Miami, clearly, looking back at it now, they just fired their head coach, Adam Gase, by the way. Yeah. I think that looking back to Miami, you can kind of say that it was a team issue, not a Landry issue, and I'm sure he contributed to a degree, but I think attitude-wise, for the fans and for Baker Mayfield, I think he was a perfect fit, and probably Greg Williams too, and Freddie Kitchens. I think those guys all fit in so well with the attitudes they have and the way they go about preparing for games and the kind of intensity they have on the field. And I think also, even if you look at Tyrod Taylor started 2.5 games, but Landry was easily his number one target in those 2.5 games. So yeah, even they fit in well. And I think Tyrod Taylor also helped Baker Mayfield an immense degree. I mean, the coaching staff went out of their way to praise him over and over again. And he was still a captain, even in week 17, Tyrod Taylor was.
No, he is a very good leader. And I think this year, whether it's just this year that he stays with us or he stays as a backup, which I really hope he does, it was so helpful for Baker to just be able to talk to him, because Baker's more talented than him, but Tyrod's been here in the NFL for a long time and worked his way to get to where he was. And he got hurt and then he lost his job just because Baker was also the better player, but he showed him how to be a really good professional in the NFL because obviously the head coach wasn't doing it for him.
I think the plan didn't work out with Tyrod Taylor. I think giving up a third round pick for a guy that played 2.5 games is not great, but I think it worked out about as well as it could have worked out, considering he didn't work out as a starter, if that makes any sense. Because I think we said before the year, the Browns need veteran leadership. And Tyrod Taylor and Jarvis Landry are very opposite in how they go about leadership. But I think they both worked out about as well as possible. And I know that Tyrod Taylor wasn't really worth the draft pick in terms of how he played in the field. But he was invaluable for Baker Mayfield. He was a team captain. And despite the fact that he didn't play that well or play that much, I still think he was very valuable to have on the team. Maybe not worthy of an early third round pick.
I think it's
it wasn't a mistake. I just don't think it worked out. But end of the day, he was still definitely an asset to the team. You know what I mean?
I think it's a short term loss in terms of the draft pick, but in the long run, I think it'll end up being beneficial because, like I said, he helped Baker immensely just grow in the NFL.
And I'm sure Drew Stanton did too.
Yeah, Drew Stanton is going to probably be here again next year and help. And I think having those two veteran guys with Baker was important because Baker has the talent. He just hadn't had the experience of playing in the NFL yet. And I think that was really important. And Baker really helped become a leader for the team as well. I mean, he got some of these young receivers to do things that we never expect or that we were hoping that they would do. Like David Njoku, my man.
Your boy improved a lot.
He was
inconsistent earlier in the year, just like he was last year. But the second half of the year, his hands, his concentration, his playmaking really improved.
You can see why the Browns drafted him in the first round. This kid can be a nightmare. Like, he is 6'4", like 250. He can outrun some cornerbacks and safeties. He can high point the ball really well. He's really good at those catches. Yep. He's fantastic at those. He's great in the middle of the field. Don't make him block. He's not a blocker. Don't make him block.
He improved as a blocker.
He was better. Yeah. I think he went
he's a receiving tight end.
I think he went from being terrible to below average as a blocker.
And if he's below average as a blocker, as a receiver as he is, that's fine.
Yeah. But his body and the way he's able to contort himself and get catches, I mean, he's just so explosive.
Before the year, we were talking about David Njoku. I wasn't a big fan. I said that, I mean, look, I believe that he could improve. I just believed I needed to see it to believe it. You know what I mean? Because he was drafted as a project, and he was very inconsistent last year, very inconsistent earlier this year. But he improved vastly. Before the year, you said you thought he could be what in terms of yards and touchdowns?
I said about like 50 to 55 catches for around like 600 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, he finished with 56 catches for 639 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So. I mean, it's just – and that's a very good growth year. I think –
For tight ends, that's pretty good.
Njoku was drafted as a project in the first round.
And remember, he was one of the youngest players in that draft.
Yes. And he was raw. I think the second half of the year, seeing Njoku and Callaway kind of improve vastly is a really, really great sign for the Browns going forward.
On top of that, Higgins improved as well.
Higgins has been a long-term project for the Browns.
Higgins was drafted in the fifth round and really didn't do much for a couple years. And then this year, he really showed how reliable of a route runner and a pass catcher he can.
He kind of just stuck around.
He had that one bad drop a couple weeks ago where he should have scored a touchdown.
Yep.
But other than that, he's been very consistent. He runs the routes. He's intelligent, which I think is why him and Baker have such a good rapport, is that he can anticipate where Baker's going to go when the scramble drill starts. So that's able to help him. And I just think he's a very viable NFL wide receiver at this point. I'm not saying he's like a starting caliber wide receiver, but he's someone that you want in your rotation. And I think that's someone that you can go into next year. If he's one of your top four receivers, you feel pretty comfortable with.
Yep, I agree 100%. Like I said, the young receivers improving is a big, big deal for the Browns, and it's great. And I think Jarvis Landry has to get a lot of credit for that. I mean, again, those guys are working out. You know, they're doing the work themselves.
And then you give Freddie Kitchen some credit, too.
Oh, sure. And I think you give a lot of people credit all around. But I just think having that veteran guy like Jarvis Landry who actually does it, not just talks about doing it.
Yeah.
I think that really, really makes a big difference. And the attitude he kind of brought was a perfect fit. I mean, you see him like talking trash after each play. I just think.
Baker got knocked out. And I think he just runs over.
I think in Miami, that became an issue. But in here, it became a positive.
I think as long as he toes the line a little bit sometimes. And I think that's where having Baker here is helpful, because Baker's around the same amount of crazy as him. So if Baker sees him going off, he's like, all right, calm down. Don't get a flag. Don't get thrown out. I need you.
What's the movie? Is it Will Ferrell? You're a proverbial line stepper.
Line stepper. Yeah, habitual line stepper. That's from the Chappelle Show.
There you go. Rest in peace, Charlie Murphy. Yep. That's what Jarvis Landry is. He's a habitual line stepper. Yeah. And yet, you know, it worked out.
Well, when you have another guy that's very similar that way, that has to be level-headed as the quarterback, Baker will get him and be like, look, I appreciate it, but I don't want you getting thrown out of this game.
Right. I think the offensive line worked and didn't work in this sense. I mean,
the interior was amazing.
Yeah, the interior of the offensive line was great. Go ahead and just do your talk about that.
I mean, Joel Bitonio and Kevin Zeitler were two of the best three guards in the NFL when it came to pass blocking.
Zeitler was signed as a big-time free agent last year. He's earned his money.
He's been amazing.
Bitonio had an amazing rookie season that was hurt the last couple
years. Yeah, he had a Lisfranc injury, which is hard to come back from, especially for an offensive lineman.
And he was fully healthy this year.
And he was fantastic.
Yep.
And then J.C. Treader, again, we've talked about it. I think I might just start calling him the Gladiator, because that dude played with a high ankle sprain.
For more than half the year.
Yeah, for like 2 months. And he's just like, you know what? I can't practice. I can barely walk, but every week I'm going to be there with Baker snapping the ball. And he blocked at a high level too.
Yep.
The Browns didn't give up much pressure in the interior.
Almost none. And that's so important for a rookie and a shorter quarterback.
Yeah, it's perfect for Baker. And then the tackles, yeah, the way the year started – you know, I think we called the fact that throwing an undrafted rookie in week one was going to be a horrible idea, and it was.
The Browns did not have a plan at left tackle.
They had no plan.
They played Bitonio at left tackle for a lot of the preseason. Then right before week one, they moved him back to guard and threw an undrafted rookie out there at left tackle.
Like, good luck, and Desmond.
Look, Desmond Harrison showed flashes, but primarily he showed that he wasn't ready. But like we've been over this 1,000 times on this podcast. Yeah. That we knew from day one he wasn't ready. Fault. No. And I think he'll stick around on the team for sure next year.
He's young. I think
as a developmental guy, he could maybe be right tackle of the future at worst.
Yeah.
That said, you know,
Hubbard was bad too.
Yeah. Yeah. Hubbard was a big free agent signing.
Hubbard might be a 1 year lost cause where the Browns just have to, I think that's where the Browns have to get to, where they, and a lot of teams fall into this trap of, we paid a guy, so we have to stick with them. No, you don't. No, you don't. The Browns,
I think Hubbard was like below average the second half of the year.
And for the amount of money they're paying him, yeah, which is above average to good right tackle money.
Yeah.
I think he has to go. And that's something we'll talk about a little bit, but like, I think that we can vastly improve at the right tackle position, because while we had a great interior offensive line, I mean, we did better later in the year, but the exterior offensive, like the offensive tackle is just,
we're a big weak spot.
Burned constantly.
And tackles are so important in the NFL.
Yeah. Cause they help protect both the blind side and then being able to keep pressure out of someone's face. Cause you get pushed back into every time.
Honestly, if Baker Mayfield didn't have like incredible pocket awareness, I think the average rookie could have gotten murdered.
Like if the Browns had drafted Josh Rosen, he would have been killed.
Yeah. Or if the Browns would have had like
Josh Allen, he would have been killed.
Yeah. I definitely agree. If the Browns had, you know, a quarterback
that was probably a year away from being good. Like, Baker was the most ready, and he was able to come in and perform. I think he was the only quarterback in this draft class that probably could have done that. Imagine if they had drafted Lamar Jackson. Maybe he could have gotten out of stuff. We probably would have gotten him killed.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that if the Browns had a quarterback back there like DeShone Kizer, Cody Kessler, Josh McCown, Austin Davis, RG3.
We'd be picking number one
again. Connor Shaw, Jason Campbell, Brandon Whedon,
Thad Lewis,
Colt McCoy, Seneca Wallace, Jake DeLome, Brady Quinn, Derek Anderson, Ken Dorsey, Bruce Gronkowski, Charlie Fry, Trent Dilfer, Jeff Garcia, Luke McCown, Kelly Holcomb, Tim Couch, Spurgeon Wynn, Doug Peterson, or Ty Detmer. I definitely think the tackles could have been a bigger issue. But fortunately for the Browns, we had Baker Mayfield. Anyways, we'll talk more about the tackles going forward.
That was awesome.
Yes, I just had to do it.
What was that, 22?
It was a lot, and they were bad.
Yeah.
I think I might have missed Thad Lewis, by the way.
No, you said Thad Lewis.
Okay, good.
We love you, Thad.
My favorite is still Austin Davis, who almost won that game.
Yeah.
And then the missed. Oh, boy. The Browns, it's a new era, Grant. Yeah. It's a new era. I think that clearly the front office, led by John Dorsey, nailed a lot of things. I mean, they found so many guys that were, you know, very, very cheap or small additions. I mean, they were just not thought of highly. They got Demaryius Randall for a mid-round draft pick and DeShone Kizer, and he was – I wouldn't say he's a Pro Bowl caliber safety, but he was just below that.
He was a good
safety. He was a very good starting free safety, which – and the Browns desperately needed a free safety.
Yeah.
I think the cornerbacks they brought in, Mitchell, Carey, who else
did they bring? EJ Gaines.
Yeah, both the Gaines, even Philip Gaines. I think all the cornerbacks they brought in played as well or better than expected. And yeah. Carey's the only one they really paid that much money. And
Terrence Mitchell was a shock.
Yeah.
And when he came back, he still played well.
Yeah, and Carey was struggling a little bit early in the year, but later in the year, he really came on.
He's so physical.
And he's a great fit next to Denzel Ward because he's a physical corner.
I think Terrence Mitchell and TJ Carey are perfect like co-number twos with each other, where they can just rotate a fresh body out there and be like, all right, you go cover this guy.
How about Jannard Avery, fifth round pick with 4.5 sacks?
Jannard Avery is such a great pick.
How about Anthony Zettel signed off claimed on waivers?
Scrap heap, yeah.
How about Chris Smith signed for almost years, no 12. Money? How about Tanner Vallejo signed?
Undrafted.
Yep. How about Brashad Perryman?
Off the street and scored a touchdown against his former team.
So. Averaged 21 yards a catch.
Yeah.
How about even Tavier Thomas, who is just a
vital special team guy.
Yeah, kind of a random guy signed. I mean, I think clearly, and this is not all John Dorsey, but it's led by John Dorsey, the entire front office has shown that they have absolutely the ability to take minimal amounts of money and draft pick compensation and go out and get very good starters or contributors or depth options. The Browns have a lot of guys this year that were very good in their role.
Yeah.
And I just think you have to, it's just
adding more high-end talent.
Besides Baker Mayfield, that's the number one reason for optimism going forward, is the front office continues to show that they know exactly what they're doing when in terms of, they nailed high draft picks. There's a couple we can talk about in a minute they didn't nail, but they nailed a lot of high draft picks, and they found guys off the scrap heap or for small amounts of money or small draft pick compensation that all were very, very important contributors.
And then we had sophomore breakouts too with Myles Garrett, Larry Okunjobi, and Jabril Peppers.
To a degree, yeah. I mean, look, Garrett, we had seen what could happen. He was healthy this year.
Yeah, and say last year he played on half a leg.
What did we say before the year? We expected double-digit sacks. 13.5. He tied the franchise record.
And he gave himself a B- for the year.
Yeah, imagine one more full-off season for him.
I don't want to know what an A performance is from him.
And if the Browns can get some better pass rushers around him and he doesn't get double-teamed as much.
And if the refs can start calling those penalties
yeah,
on.
Yeah, by the way, he gets held constantly.
Like, how many times does the dude have to get dragged down by his helmet to get for a penalty?
I know. But Myles Garrett's breakout was expected, but it's still great to see it. I mean, he's a terror.
I think Okunjobi was the more surprising one.
Do you want to talk about him or you want me to?
Let's both talk about it. I mean, this Go ahead. This dude was a third-round pick out of a school that started playing football his freshman year of college. He was in the first senior class out of Charlotte. Third-round pick. And last year, he didn't play that much, and everyone's like, you need to play more Larry Okunjobi. You need to play more Larry Okunjobi. He was playing well in limited snaps. You need to play more of him. Well, we had to this year because we got rid of literally every defensive tackle.
He was our only good defensive tackle.
Yeah, and he was so good. And he played the last half of the year with a completely torn bicep. And then the last game of the year, he got a concussion and came back in and played.
That's
I don't like that he did that, but that just shows that it was how tough he is. And me and Andrew, it's not really a debate because we both think he's a great player, but I really think he can be a number one defensive tackle in the NFL. Just he was playing at a high level despite the fact that he was playing with one and a half arms.
Yeah.
Like, he had probably, like, 50% power in his one arm.
He had that giant, like, cast thing on
his
arm.
Yeah, he looked like a cyborg with one of his arms. Like, if you just get him, and he doesn't require surgery, that's going to be great. So we don't have to worry about him recovering long-term from a surgery. So Larry Okunjobi just was so impressive. He's second in the team in sacks. I mean, he was constantly helping.
5.5 sacks for an interior defensive lineman is excellent.
He's a pretty good run defender. He just didn't have anyone next to him. He's probably like an average run defender. He's a better pass rusher, but he was so impressive. And we got him in the third round.
He was one of the picks that the previous front office absolutely nailed.
The previous front office, their last draft, seems like it actually yielded some good players.
I think the Sashi Brown front office was, I would say, pretty good at evaluating draft talent. But they just failed so miserably in adding depth to the roster and acquiring veterans.
And high-end talent.
Yes. And you can say that maybe that they didn't have enough time to fix that plan. But I do think that
they also passed on like 15,000 quarterbacks.
Yeah. I do think the Sashi Brown front office did a good job of finding young talent and setting up this current Browns front office to have success. I still am very glad that we replaced them.
Oh, yeah.
But
I mean, getting Larry Okunjobi in the third round was not a John Dorsey thing. It was a Sashi Brown.
Okunjobi was a beast this year. I think, you know, the Browns, when you pick him in the third round, are kind of hoping he can be a solid rotational defensive tackle.
Or like a solid starter.
And instead, he's a beast.
Yeah.
And having Myles Garrett and Okunjobi on the defensive line together is...
Myles Garrett was the obvious pick, so there's not really much praise for the front office there, because he literally, if you picked anyone else, there would have been a riot. But Jarrell
Peppers...
Fun
to watch those guys do work, though.
Jarrell Peppers at pick 25 that year.
That's your boy. Go ahead and talk about
Jabril Peppers had a good year because he finally played strong safety and played one position for a full year in his career. Like I said last week, for the first time probably in his life.
Yeah, we went deep on him last week.
Yeah, so I mean, there's not much more to add to Peppers, but I think we can feel confident going in for the next 2 years that we have a good starting safety tandem with Demaryius Randall and Jabril Peppers.
How about another great young player, Joe Schobert? He was a Pro Bowler last year, kind of out of nowhere. And I think a lot
that
of
was
people,
mostly just stats based.
I think a lot of people were kind of questioning how legitimate it was.
Yeah.
But this year, no question.
He's the leader of the defense.
Yep.
He is the quarterback of the defense. He's not the best player in the defense. Miles
he's
Garrett
one
is.
Of he's one of the best pass covering linebackers in the sport today.
And he's not a bad pass rusher either.
And he's a good run defender too. He's a legitimate star linebacker.
Yeah, he's one of the best inside linebackers in the AFC, if not the NFL. So, I mean, Joe Schobert is that person that we can definitely put in the middle for a lot of years, and he can just quarterback the defense.
The Browns could have really used Chad Thomas to be decent this year.
He was a
third round pick that literally didn't play at all.
I think he's pretty much a bust. I think, and like I said, the Browns have to learn when they missed on something, because every talent evaluator is going to miss.
Yep.
And that's just going to happen. If you hit 100% of your picks, you're a robot. Or you're playing Madden 18.
He's a kind of a physical specimen, and he was hurt in the preseason, which hurt, but I mean, he didn't see the field at all.
No. I think the Browns, if they can put him on the practice squad, maybe that would be a great way to do it. Don't waste a roster spot on him, because you're going to need every single roster spot if you want to compete.
I mean, he'll be here in training camp next year.
Probably.
And maybe if he's improved a lot of the offseason, he can stick around. But he's definitely looking like a bust, like a miss.
And like I said, that's going to happen. As a third-round pick, you kind of wish that wouldn't happen. But, you know, we'll chalk that one up. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone misses. Like, Corbett didn't even play this year. But that's really not his fault, because like we said, that the interior offensive line was elite.
Yeah, Corbett was part of the problem with left tackle. They drafted him hoping he could be a tackle, and it was clear from the beginning that he was an interior lineman. And I think there's still a good chance he has success as an interior lineman.
I do too.
Unfortunately, the Browns have zero needed interior line right now.
I think
he's going to be a depth option for now.
I think 2020 is his year.
Yeah.
Because I think when J.C. Treader's contract expires, I think they're going to be like, okay, we have this young guy. Let's give him an opportunity, which I, for a while,
or if there's an injury, he'll step
in. Or if Petonio or Zeitler get hurt, then that'll be important.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, Browns did not nail everything.
And our outside linebackers still weren't great.
Yeah, that's one thing going forward that we can talk about in a few minutes here. You know, I think Kirksey is best suited to be an interior guy, and Schobert has locked that down.
Yeah.
But he's getting paid enough money, he's going to probably stick around for one more year.
He can't be cut.
I think maybe the Browns could ask him to drop a little bit of weight in the offseason.
Could also ask him to restructure his contract.
And he could also help with the run defense because he's a very good run stopper. Yeah. I just don't know if he has enough coverage skills. He did have like 4 or 5 pass deflections this year. He was better. I think with an offseason of improvement, he could maybe be a good outside linebacker.
One more thing before we take a break. Jamie Collins. What do we do?
We've talked about him on this podcast so many times. Because he plays well, he looks like the Pro Bowl caliber player we traded for. When he doesn't play well, it's almost always effort-based, and you're just looking at him like, what are you doing, dude? Yeah. So, if you didn't look at stats at all, what would you say about Jamie Collins' season?
He was not impactful.
Inconsistent at best?
Yeah. He would have a good 2 or 3-game stretch, and then he'd be bad for 2 or 3 games.
He led the Browns in tackles.
105.
He had 14 and a half tackles for loss.
Yeah, he was good at anticipating run plays like that.
He had 4 sacks. He had a couple pass deflections. He had a forced fumble.
I think the biggest thing we saw is that athleticism is still there.
Yeah, I mean, he's not fast.
He's not the peak athlete, but it's still there.
He's not fast, but he's such a smart player that he reads the play so quickly sometimes. I mean, I think his best skill is still breaking up stuff. Like, if you run a screen on his side of the field,
it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. And I think, you know, his contract is mostly non-guaranteed for next year, and he's getting paid a lot of money. And I think we assumed for most of the year that he was going to get cut. But I think, you know,
I don't know if you can bring in 2 starting outside linebackers.
That's the thing. And the Browns have enough needs that I think Collins has shown that if the Browns are competitive, he can be an asset. And the Browns are going to be competitive going forward. And I think that Jamie Collins may have earned one more year. And if he plays well next year, then, you know, he's not old yet.
I think he's 27 or 28.
Yeah, and I just, you know, Jamie Collins is kind of an enigma. But down the stretch, he played a lot better.
He did.
What would you do going forward?
I mean,
I think I'd probably keep him.
I think at this point, you might have to keep him just because you could cut him, but you're going to have to replace him unless you're going to pay another linebacker money. So basically you're going to either replace him with a more expensive player or you're going to draft one and hope that he can replace the production.
Yeah, and I think the Browns have enough needs that I think he's probably worth keeping around for another year. And obviously, you know, a coaching staff change, a defensive coordinator change could change a lot of this stuff.
And bring in competition for him. Make him feel like he actually has to earn it.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't had to. And the backups we have right now aren't going to do anything. Ray Armstrong
Do you think he's ideal as a strong side or a weak side outside linebacker?
Strong side.
Yeah.
Because he's really good at playing downhill and being able to get to those areas. And he doesn't have the athleticism he used to. If he was Patriots Jamie Collins, then maybe I could see him playing weak side. But he's not Patriots Jamie Collins anymore.
That's the only thing is, I think if you look at Collins and Kirksey, both of them are probably ideally a strong side guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Browns.
He's not athletic enough to be weak side.
Right. And I think Schobert has to stay inside.
No, they can't move him. If they do, then they're idiots.
So I just think, you know, depending on the coaching staff and depending on, you know, what the defense looks like next year, I think it's an interesting debate about what to do with Collins and Kirksey. Because if you keep both of them, you're paying them a lot of money. So I think it could be an either or thing. But I don't know. Maybe they like to bring him back and see what happens. One last thing that was a weaker point for the Browns this year with special teams.
Yeah.
The first half of the year, the Browns had maybe the worst special teams I've ever seen. I seriously think that Alabama might have a better special teams unit than the Browns did.
I mean, their kicker probably could make field goals, unlike Zane Gonzalez.
The Browns special teams, and this is the punter was good. Britton Colquitt was good.
He's always good.
But the coverage teams improved a lot. among, you know, as the year went on.
Peppers has been better as a return man.
Yep. And Callaway looked great.
Callaway is a good return man. They might have to put him on kick returns next year.
You know, I think the special teams improved, but it was still definitely a period of
It went from being horrendous to slightly below average by the end of the year.
We don't have to talk much more on special teams. We're going to have a different coordinator next year, I have to think.
Yeah.
We still have to talk about some things that we want to change going forward and kind of the offseason outlook and some coaching staffs. But first, we got to take a real quick break. And we are back. So going forward, I think there is a clear roadmap to success for the Browns because they've already nailed some of the very most important things.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, clearly the Browns have to pick a head coach and a staff around him.
Well, I think that's required and by that's, the NFL.
Yeah, I hear you. Thanks, smartass. There are a lot of candidates. We're not going to go into the candidates right now because that's a whole other podcast. Yeah,
I mean, before the podcast, we were reading probably about, I think we already saw like 8 to 10 names
at least
being mentioned.
The Browns have to find the right head coach. It's essential.
Staff as well.
Finding the right head coach is the difference between the Browns being a potential playoff contender for the next few years and the potential Super Bowl contender the next few years.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Browns get the right head coach, they could absolutely be a playoff team next year, and they could absolutely be a Super Bowl contender the next couple of years. That's not an exaggeration.
No.
It's not at all. We discussed about the Ravens game. The run defense has to be fixed. The Browns struggled against the run most of the year.
Interior defensive line, especially, they need it.
Yeah, Graham has a theory about Ogba.
Yeah, I mean, we know at this point he's not a great pass rusher.
Emmanuel Ogba.
Yeah, at this point we know he's not going to be Garrett's probably.
He had 3 sacks for a full season as a defensive end, which is disappointing.
Yeah, he's not going to be our number 2 pass rusher. So
right.
At this point, the Browns fans can't just be like Ogba. No, he's a good player. I'm not going to slander him. He's a good player.
Good run.
He's a rotational defensive end that could start actually, like in the base 4-3 when we're trying to stop the run. I would absolutely keep him on the outside there because that gives him the opportunity to stop the run where he's great at holding his spot and keeping contained. And he's actually helped Garrett do that as well. Garrett became a better run defender this year.
He did have a lot of pass deflection, which helps.
But you can also do that, to my point. You can do that from the middle too.
Yeah.
He plays heavily already. He weighs 275, 280 pounds already, which is probably another reason he's not a great defensive end. Most defensive ends are around 245 to 260. 275, 280 is usually too big to be a pass rusher in today's NFL. Because these offensive linemen
are... For a 4-3 end, yes.
Yeah, because these offensive linemen are 300 pounds, all of them. So you're not going to be able to beat them with just raw power. That's what an offensive lineman is supposed to do.
So you think he's an interior defensive tackle option going forward?
I think a nickel and dime, he absolutely could be. I think what you could do is on nickel and dime, you bring Avery in and put him at the other pass rushing opposite of Garrett. And then you put Ogba inside with Okunjobi because Ogba can hold his point of attack and the guards are not as quick. So he'll be able to take advantage of that a little bit better. And he can still deflect the ball if it's being thrown in the middle of the field. And then it also gives Okunjobi someone who can hold a guard or hold a center. And then he can get off of things and be able to affect the quarterback and be able to pass. Because Okunjobi's not a run stuffer. He can stop the run to an extent. He's a pass rushing defensive tackle. So you have to give him the best chance to succeed. And I think on nickel and dime only, and I think in base, it would be a bad idea to move Garrett or Ogba inside because that would neutralize his effectiveness as a run defender.
As an exterior run defender, yeah.
But I think in nickel and dime situations, move him inside. Move him inside and have Avery, and then if you want to sign another defensive end in the offseason or draft one in this year, do that. And then just have those guys rotate.
Yeah, I think ultimately the Browns need a defensive tackle that can either play not like a Danny Shelton type where he doesn't do anything at all except block the run. But I think they need a defensive tackle that can definitely be good against the run and play 2 or 3 downs. And Ogba can be a 2 or 3 down guy.
Yeah.
Ogba's good at rushing the passer. So, you know, maybe Ogba plays 3rd downs, you know, and
the Browns need a better second pass rusher with Garrett.
They need a defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And they need a pass rusher.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Ogba's versatility and Avery's versatility can kind of help fill those holes a little bit.
The Browns need
more talent in the defensive line.
I think that still leaves one opening because I think those two together can make one position, yeah, and then the other position still needs to be filled.
This draft is very deep at defensive line. We've told you guys on this podcast before.
And free agency.
Yeah, I expect the Browns to find a starter somewhere.
The Browns are going to get a defensive tackle either in free agency or the draft.
And they could also start a depth defensive tackle option. They don't really have – their backup defensive tackles haven't really impressed me at all.
No, Billy Price is
– yeah, nothing. Coley's kind of whatever.
Or Brian Price, not Billy Price. Billy, yeah, Price is the center for, yeah, the
Coley's kind of whatever.
Coley's a rotation guy. They need a starting defensive
Carl
tackle.
Carl Davis, he's not
he's
bad.
Nothing.
He's all right. Yeah.
The only guys that
defensive
I would
tackle
keep,
has to improve.
The two depth guys that the Browns, I think, will keep will be Zettel and Chris Smith.
And those are outside guys.
Yeah. They can move it, and they can move in more in nickel and dime situations, yeah, but you want stronger guys, yeah, in those scenarios, not Zettel.
Ideally,
Smith
the Browns
would
just have a good defensive tackle that can play all three downs,
exactly,
and not have to move guys.
You want Zettel and Smith playing between like 15 to, right, 20 snaps a game.
Yeah.
Other than that, you want someone that can play 35, 40
on the
50,
roster,
45 snaps.
I think that's one of three major, major needs.
Absolutely. I think it's the number
the
one.
The offensive
need.
Tackles have to get fixed. There's not a lot of great tackles in the draft. There's not a lot of great tackles in free agency. The Browns may have to get creative, yeah, but somewhere or another, we don't have to go into it too much, but the Browns have to fix the tackles.
I mean, you know me.
I think the Browns have three, yeah, guys that could compete for right tackle. I just don't know if there's a left tackle on the roster going forward.
I think it might be Greg Robinson.
I don't know if it's Joel Bitonio.
Which
I don't know if you want to move him, considering how great he's been as a guard.
Which I understand why you wouldn't want to move
him. I mean,
him.
That would open up a spot for Corbett.
But I also understand why you wouldn't want to move Bitonio. But look.
I trust the Browns front office to evaluate the talent they have and figure this out. Because I don't know if they're going to be able to find. I don't think there's a left tackle out there the Browns
can
find.
There's not in free agency. In the draft, yeah, the Browns play themselves out of getting Jonah Williams.
I think that's one of the most fascinating questions about the offseason. Because defensive line, we need a tackle. Yeah. Wide receiver, we need a wide receiver. But among the offensive line, unless the Browns fall in love with a guy in the draft or they trade for a guy, which is tough to do.
Yeah, no one's going
to
trade a
I
good
think
left
they're
going
to have to get creative. I think they have a lot of guys that can be good right tackles. I think they're going to have to get creative.
I think Robinson and Harrison can compete. Hubbard should be gone. But I think Harrison and Robinson can compete.
I mean, what are your options? Outside guy, which is not great.
Robinson's probably your best option.
Robinson.
He's probably your best
maybe
option.
Maybe Harrison could have a huge offseason to improve. Maybe you could move, Bitonio out there.
And then put Corbett.
Maybe Corbett can somehow be it, but I really doubt that.
No, if Corbett's playing, it's going to be at probably left guard. Yeah.
And so it's a fascinating question. I'll be really interested
but yeah,
to see.
They need an offensive they need offensive tackle help.
Yeah.
Or they need to at least figure out what they're doing because they're going to have to get creative.
I think ideally there'd be a guy available in the first round of draft, but that's just not the case.
Browns played themselves out of it.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, we have right tackle options. I think one of those guys can step up. But left
Browns
tackle.
Don't get cute and draft like a right tackle in the first round.
Right. Yeah.
There's some good right tackles in this draft, but don't do that.
Yeah. We'll see about left tackle. It's going to be important. I think having Baker Mayfield helps because, like we said, his pocket awareness is so great. But, yeah, we'll see. It's definitely a priority going forward is to somehow fix that one way or another. I think the other big need is a number one wide receiver.
And I'm really tired of hearing all these pundits being like, Baker Mayfield's so good at spreading the ball around. The Browns don't need a number one receiver.
Okay. Let me go ahead and just read the list of the top 12 passers.
And
in the
I'll
NFL
tell
this
you
year.
Which – receivers they have.
Ben Roethlisberger.
He has Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster.
Clear number one there. Andrew Luck.
He has T.Y. Hilton.
Clear number one. Matt Ryan.
He has Julio Jones
clear
and Calvin Ridley.
Clear number one. Kirk Cousins.
He has Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen.
Clear number one. Aaron Rodgers.
He has Devonta Adams.
Clear number one. Case Keenum.
He's the one.
Oh, that's passing attempts. This list is not.
Yeah.
Yards.
Pat
Mahomes.
He has Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
He doesn't have a clear number one, but he has
much
talent
Kelce.
All around.
Kelsey's basically a number one wide receiver.
Matt Ryan. Jared Goff.
He has
three legit.
Cooper Kupp when he's healthy, yeah. Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks.
Yeah. They don't have a number one, but they have so much talent all around.
Yeah, they have like three number twos. Yeah.
And they have a great, great running back, too, as a receiver.
We talked to Andrew Luck.
Tom Brady is the one.
He's the only one.
Phillip Rivers.
He has Keenan Allen.
Clear number one.
Yeah, then Eli had Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham, clear number one. Deshaun Watson.
He has DeAndre Hopkins.
Clear number one. Drew Brees.
He has Michael Thomas.
Clear number one. So
that's our point.
If you're looking at literally the top 12 passers in the NFL this year for 11 yards.
11 of them.
11 of them have a clear number one. Tom Brady does not.
And
he hasn't
been that good.
He kind of has an assortment of random guys. But quite honestly, Tom Brady had a good year, but not a great year.
Not to his standards, yeah.
Right. And I just think you know, Rob Gronkowski was that guy for him. They were hoping Josh Gordon could be that guy.
And then Josh Gordon left the team, and Gronk is a shell of himself.
That's one of the main reasons the Patriots are struggling this year, is because they don't have a great number one. And I think going forward, the Browns have Landry's a number two. Njoku is the tight end. They've got Callaway, Higgins. They've got guys that can
Perryman.
Be Perryman. They've got a full set of receivers except a number one.
Yep.
And I think they need a bigger guy that can go up and get the ball.
Yeah, they don't need like a T.Y.
They've got
Hilton
Njoku,
type guy.
But they need a guy that can go up. They have route runners. They have deep threats. They need a guy that can go up and get the ball.
Yeah, they need like a 6'2", 6'3", 220-pound guy that is good after the catch.
And once again, this is great because there's a ton of good in the draft. A
lot of good receivers in this draft.
A lot of rookie receivers don't have a huge impact. We're not saying the Browns have to go out and find
Julio Jones.
Right, next year. But they have to find a guy that can be a number one type wide receiver sometime in the future.
Or they just need another big body that can catch the ball and in traffic.
Yeah.
Because you have to do that with Baker Mayfield because he's going to throw dimes, which means you're going to be in traffic.
Yeah.
And then you have to be able to get yards after the catch.
Well, you look at Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, and I think if you don't have a true number one, that's the recipe. A big receiving tight end. Speedy outside,
the fastest guy in the NFL.
Speedy outside route runners, but even they have who's their big receiver? I forget the name now.
It's not Chris Conley.
No, I forget his name, but they have a legit kind of number two.
Not Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, Sammy Watkins was for a while for them, like a possession. Sammy Watkins, a bigger physical guy.
Yeah,
the Browns need a number one or at least a bigger physical wide receiver.
And most of the guys, those guys we named, with the exception of like Antonio Brown and T.Y. Hilton, they're all big guys.
Yeah.
Or at least guys that are good at the catch point and are able to catch.
And T.Y. Hilton and Antonio Brown are so good, they don't have to be big.
Yeah.
They're always open.
That's because they have elite speed, and Antonio Brown specifically is like an elite route runner.
Yeah, so. I mean, Baker Mayfield has done very well to make a lot of these receivers look good.
For sure, Perryman looks good.
Right, and these guys have improved, but the Browns need one more pass catcher. And, if you told me coming before this season, coming into this offseason we're in now, the Browns were only one pass catcher away. Like, okay, sure. Because before the season, it looked like we were like five pass catchers away.
Well, before the season, we thought we had Jarvis Landry and Josh Gordon, and then that just didn't work out.
Well, you couldn't trust Josh Gordon.
Right. And
but
so
Higgins took a step forward. Callaway took a step forward.
Perryman
came out
of
nowhere. Njoku improved. We just need that number one.
Yeah. We have young guys for development purposes.
I think
between Ratley and Willis. Yeah, Willis.
I think the draft is where we're going to find that.
But yeah.
I don't think the Browns can allocate more free agency money to a top receiver because they're paying Jarvis Landry.
There's the best one available is probably Golden Tate, and he's not a number one receiver.
Yeah, he's not the type of guy.
He's a slot.
Yeah.
He's a slot guy, and he's older.
Denzel Ward played great, but he had two concussions.
In about 5 weeks.
And I think that's a huge concern. He's a smaller guy.
I think part of it is he doesn't know how to tackle.
Yeah.
The second concussion was his fault because he was trying to tackle CJ Uzoma from the Bengals, and instead of going for his legs, which any smaller guy is taught to do against a big guy, you go for the legs because you were not going to beat him head on. He went head on at him. He got rocked and he got a concussion.
Yep.
You can't do that. If you have many more concussions, he's not going to last very long in the league. And the last thing the Browns need is to finally have that number one corner, only for him to have his career cut short by concussions. So he needs to spend this offseason making sure he's okay, making sure that his symptoms don't keep going. Like, I remember in hockey that 1 year, Sidney Crosby had concussion symptoms for, like, months. So hopefully that doesn't
happen.
Concussions
are scary.
And they are scary.
For a guy that young.
And he's a smaller guy, too, so he has to be careful with that. That's not his game. He needs to learn how to tackle, but he also needs to learn to be smarter about how he goes about his things. Because he's talented enough.
If the Browns don't have Denzel Ward, their secondary is one piece away. If they have Denzel Ward, every other piece fits in where it needs to fit in.
Yeah.
The Browns really got to hope that Denzel Ward can kind of not have these issues going forward. And I
think that's some
if Denzel Ward gets another concussion, he has to consider honestly just retiring.
Yeah.
Because head injuries are that serious.
Yeah.
And the Browns have to kind of teach him better tackling technique, like you said.
I mean, it happened with Luke Kuechly for a number of years, and it took him a long time to come back.
Yep.
So you have to be smart about those things.
I think the Browns have a ton of money to spend.
They have $80 million in cap
space. I don't
think
they're going to go out there and sign a lot of big ticket free agents.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to spend like $30 million
in cap. I think the draft is deep in the needs they have, except for tackle. I think the Browns are going to make one or two strategic signings.
I think they're
maybe a starter, maybe a couple depth guys.
I think they'll sign at least one starter, maybe two, and then they'll probably end up with like three or four depth guys.
Yep. And I think the majority of the money the Browns have, they're either going to save for future years. and for signing younger guys to extensions, or they're going to use it on guys on the roster now for extensions, like Schobert and Randall could both be extension ready.
Schobert should absolutely get extended. If he doesn't, I'm going to be furious.
Same thing with Randall.
Randall has one more year left on his deal, but pay him.
Yeah,
just pay him. He doesn't have injury issues. He played the entire year with nagging injuries and still was a good safety. He's 25.
Well,
pay him.
And plus, guys like Schobert and Randall, if you give them a lot of guaranteed money now, that gives you more flexibility in the next couple years, because the Browns are going to have to.
The Browns are going to have to pay two guys,
yes,
probably $40 million combined.
A lot of this young talent is great, but guys like, you know, Ogunjobi, Peppers, Garrett, Njoku, Baker Mayfield, they're going to have to start, not next year, but in the next couple years, they're going to have to start paying a lot of these guys, or they're going to lose some of them. And the Browns have to be – the Browns have a lot of money to spend right now, and I have no problem with them spending some money strategically. But I think they have to be careful about overspending. And I don't think they will, because I trust our front office. But the Browns have to reserve some of this money, because they're going to have to start paying guys that are on the roster already.
Yeah. I mean, if you just think about Baker and Garrett, I mean, Garrett, might, if he keeps getting better, he might end up demanding Khalil Mack money, which is a lot of money. And then Baker Mayfield could get paid $25, $30 million a year.
Easily.
So you have to be smart with how you spend, even now, because – you have four more years of Baker at a cheap rate. You have three more years of Garrett at a pretty cheap rate.
Yep.
Your window, realistically, is probably 2 or 3 years before you're going to have to start.
Yeah. It doesn't mean the Browns can't be good then, but it just means they're going to start making tough choices.
But the
point
that Andrew's making, front load that money, because you have the salary cap space now. That way, when it gets to 2021, 2022, and you have to pay these guys, you have that salary cap. Because the last thing the Browns want to have to do is pull an Oakland Raiders and have to trade Miles Garrett.
Yep.
I mean, they're not going to trade Baker, but they'll, like, if they have to, if they are hard capped and they have to trade people, that's when you see teams go from contenders to nothing.
Yep.
The Ravens.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see how the Browns approach the draft and free agency. I trust the front office, though. Yeah. They know what they're doing.
I agree.
The Browns have one of the better front offices in the sport. I honestly think that. It's only been 1 year, but I really believe that. The talent.
Well, having three Green Bay guys helps.
Yep.
Quick coaching.
Yeah, we'll do a quick coaching update. There are 8 openings in the NFL, which is about average. Usually there's somewhere between 6 and 8.
25% of the NFL needs
that. That's actually pretty common.
That's crazy.
NFL teams are not patient.
No.
The Browns
have the most attractive head coaching job.
Yeah, they do.
They have $80 million
in salary. I don't think you can dispute it. The Browns have one of the best rookie quarterbacks ever. They've got a ton of young talent. They've got a great front office. They've got money to spend. They've got a division that's getting old, except for maybe the Ravens. But even the Ravens have a lot of older players.
The Ravens and the Browns are the two upcoming teams. But
the Bengals are going to suck for a long time.
And then the Steelers are a couple years whenever Ben retires, unless they make some drastic changes. Basically, what we're saying is the Browns have a very attractive position.
The Browns can probably pick their number one candidate, which has never been the case.
What are you talking about? He who must not be named was number one. But yeah, the Browns have a lot of attractive pieces as opposed to what they've had over the years, where they usually get the 5th, 6th, 7th guy, like Mike Pettine or Rob Chudzinski.
Yeah, Mike Pettine was not the most exciting NFL head coaching candidate, let me tell you.
No.
The Browns are going to interview a lot of people. We're not going to talk about those people right now. We've gone into who some of them could be earlier in the season, but we're going to have another podcast. Actually, we can tease it now. Tease, that's right. We're going to have another podcast within the week or so discussing just the head coaching candidates, breaking down the options, breaking down our opinions, breaking down their careers. We're going to have a whole podcast about that. But just know the Browns are the most attractive opening, which has absolutely never happened before.
No.
And it's exciting. And the Browns are going to get their guy most likely.
I'm saying you can get the other teams like Green Bay.
Yeah, Green Bay's an attractive spot.
That's because they have Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. But
that's really all of it.
But they're getting old.
Yeah, they're old, but they have one of the best quarterbacks of all time. So anyone that goes there, you should be able to compete. The Jets
are the exact opposite.
The Jets are similar to the Browns, where they have a lot of salary cap money. They have a lot of high draft pick capital. They're picking 3rd again this year, and they have an extra 2nd-round pick from the Darnold trade. Or no, the Colts. They traded their pick to the Colts, but they're going to have the 3rd pick this year.
They've got Darnold, who showed improvement.
They have Darnold, who did get better at the end of the year. He was throwing a lot of picks early in the year, but he's gotten better.
The thing about the Jets is they don't have anywhere near the roster talent the Browns have.
No, but
they've got capital to spend in terms of draft picks and money going forward.
And they are a big market. So that will attract some people.
I would say they're right around that same. Depending on the coach, I think a veteran coach would look more at the Packers and a young coach would look more at the Jets.
Yeah.
Denver, I think, is relatively attractive just because
Elway.
Yeah, because they've been a winning franchise. Because, you know, the thing about Elway is he really hasn't found good quarterbacks.
Yeah, which is ironic.
It is. I think Denver is still an attractive job because of organizational stability and history, and they still have a decent NFL roster. They have a good defense.
Their defense is good, yeah. I mean, they have two great pass rushers.
I think if you look at the rest of the openings, you can kind of lump Miami, Tampa Bay, Arizona, and Cincinnati all in the same category.
They're all bad.
Cincinnati might hire
Who has the best quarterback out of those when healthy? Probably the Bengals.
Jameis Winston.
I think Andy Dalton.
Ryan Tannehill.
Andy Dalton and Josh Rosen.
Josh Rosen sucked this year.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a rookie, and he didn't have a lot of talent, but he sucked.
I think Andy Dalton might be the best out of those. So are you really
the third best out of those.
Are you really – so our point is, do you really want to go to any of those situations if you're a hot candidate?
Miami's a nice place to live, and they have a very average roster. Tampa Bay is a nice place to live. They don't have a whole lot good going on.
No, they might move on from their first overall
pick. Arizona is a nice place to live if you like warm weather. They have a young rookie quarterback who –
got obliterated.
Yeah, he needs improvement. They need a lot of help.
They need an offensive line really bad.
And receivers.
Well, they need to protect him first because Rosen can't move like Baker can.
Cincinnati, I think, is attractive only because
– they had a lot of injuries.
Yeah, I think they have a decent roster still.
Their offense is pretty good.
I think their owner has proven that he wants stability, so you might get more leash there.
Maybe our favorite coach.
Marvin Lewis got 16 years without winning a playoff game.
Maybe our favorite.
Let me say it again. Marvin Lewis – Bengals head coach got 16 years without winning a playoff game. I mean, stability is good, but like, my God, that's incredible.
The Browns probably had 16 head coaches.
Point is, the Browns are the most attractive opening.
Yeah.
I don't think it's close.
I don't think so either.
And that's awesome. Like we said, check later this week. We will have an entire podcast dedicated just to breaking down head coaching candidates. We can talk about Greg Williams and Freddie Kitchens then because they're both candidates for the head coaching job. Yep. We don't have to go down that rabbit hole right now. Greg Williams, not the Browns' next head coach. Okay, just leaving that there. We're going to have a lot of podcasts in the offseason. We're going to have kind of topical, you know, we're going to talk about things that happen, but also we're going to have the head coaching one. We're going to have a free agency preview. We're going to have a free agency reaction. We'll have reaction to, you know, if some veterans get cut or extensions get signed. We're going to have a ton of draft content, especially later, a few months from now, once Graham can do a lot of his research. That's kind of his thing.
Yeah, it hasn't started yet.
This is going to be a fascinating offseason for the Browns. It's going to be a long 8 or 9 months to wait till we can watch football again. Next year is going
to
be...
I'm already wanted to be here.
They're going to have more expectations than they've had any year since they came back in 1999. Yeah. And it's a really, really, really exciting time to be a Browns fan. This was a really fun second half of the year.
Yeah.
We really appreciate everyone for listening. It means a lot to us. You know, we put in a lot of time to do this podcast. We try and put out as much quality as possible. We've kind of nailed down the audio issues we were having.
Yeah.
Our podcast should sound very good going forward, unless you don't like the sound of our voices, in which good luck. But we really appreciate the listens. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. It was a monster. We're well over an hour.
Yeah.
But there's just so much to talk about, and I think – being someone that wants to podcast about the Browns, I think it's great to have a team that gives you so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And we're really, really excited to stay with you guys and keep giving you all kinds of content going forward in the offseason.
Thank you for listening during the entire 2018 Browns season, and stick around for more because
the Cavs suck. They have like one or two good players, but we'll talk about them soon.
This is just the beginning.
Yeah.
So just stick with us and let's enjoy this ride together.
It's the dawning of a new era of both Browns football and of a Tree City Sports podcast that talks positive about the Browns.
For once.
Yep. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We appreciate it, and we will talk to you later this week.
Peace.